Well, good evening. How many of you have ever, when I say a garden spider, I'm thinking of a big black and yellow spider. They're outside. I don't think I've ever seen one inside. But they have these big webs, and sometimes if you catch a cricket or something like that, you can throw it in there, and the spider will go over to it and just start rolling that thing up until it's all a nice little bundle. You can't really tell it's a cricket anymore. All right. It has a lot to do with what I want to talk about tonight. 2 Corinthians 10 and 5 says, "We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and we take every thought captive to obey Christ." This was down Murray Road. Doug Twiddell talked on this, and it really struck me the way he described it and all that. He didn't use a spider. That's my part. But that's what I want to talk about tonight. I would like to know what you tie your thoughts up with. Anyway, we'll go on from there. Ephesians 3, 14 through 21. All right, 3 and 14. "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and the length and the height and the depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen." That's the answer to my question there. I know from vast experience, personal experience, that if it's left up to me, I cannot control my thoughts for very long. Kind of like Greg was saying this morning, if heaven or hell depended on our good behavior for one day, and I was starting to sweat. So, I mean, it would be difficult, very impossible, more than likely. So, I have learned that no amount of my doing or grunting or, you know, whatever phrase you want to put to it, I can't come up with it. It's just not in there, and I'm not going to be able to do it. So it's got to be God. And if it's all just I lost it, whatever it was. So it's what I'm wanting to look at is kind of the physical, I guess, manifestation of spirituality or something along those lines. How do we do this? How do I bow my knees to the Father and bring glory to God in my physical presence? You know, where does that mesh at? So, I'm not going to go to these. Exodus 20 and 21 says, well, I'm not going to turn to them. The people stood far off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. This is when they were receiving the law, and the mountain is quaking, and it's dark and on fire all at the same time, and lightning, and I mean, it's just every natural phenomenon was happening right at this moment, pretty much. And the people, the Israelites, stood back here, and Moses went near. And then in Psalm 22 and 11, it says, we're talking about God here, it says, "Be not far from me, for trouble is near, and there is none to help." So, we want God to be right next to us. We want Him to be there, because trouble's always near. There's always trouble close by. And then in Jeremiah 12 and 2, it says, "You are near in their mouth and far from their heart." And this was talking, Jeremiah's talking about the Israelites here. And most of the Israelites were pretty quick to call on God when they were in trouble. But for the most part, God wasn't in their hearts. He wasn't in their lifestyle. He wasn't in their being. He was just what got them out of trouble. So, let's see. Let's turn to James 4. James 4. I'm going to read 5 through 10. "Or do you suppose it is to no purpose that the Scripture says, 'He yearns jealously over the Spirit that He has made to dwell in us, but He gives more grace.' Therefore, it says, 'God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.' Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will exalt you." So this is what drawing near to God, that's what I want to do. That's where I want to be. I want to be near to God. Well, Moses walked to get nearer to God, and I wrote this down. What did I say? Yeah, here it is. Moses walked to be near to God. David asked for help, and Jeremiah says, "Not just hot air." So you got to have it in your heart. And then it says in here to cleanse your hands and purify your hearts, you double minded, and humble yourself, and there's things you need to do. There's things to do. It's not just with no effort. There's got to be effort in there. I've scribbled too many things out. I'm sorry. One of the things that Doug said down there, he said, Satan takes us captive, or we take our thoughts captive. That's our two choices. It's pretty much one or the other. And one of the... I got that too early, sorry. I wanted to turn to Mark 9. I think I got an example of some slackers here. Mark 9. I heard this on the radio, so you can take it for what it's worth. I thought it was kind of neat. What's happening is right before this story was the Transfiguration, and Jesus had taken Peter, James, and John up on the mountain with him, and they were coming down off of a very exciting experience, and then they come down and they meet up with the rest of the disciples. And when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, was greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down. And he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he answered them, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy. And he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood. And it has often cast him in the fire and in the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible for one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." And I think the King James puts prayer and fasting in there. And the speaker I heard on the radio was saying that these disciples were not lost. They weren't in danger of going to hell, but they hadn't been doing their homework, I guess you could say. It was really neat because he went into it. It's like, all right, think about it. Jesus goes up to the mountain and he takes Peter, James, and John with him. And the rest of them are like, "Well, why can't we go?" And so they, you know, think of all the excuses that they could come up with. Let's see, I wrote them down. So, well, Jesus is away. What happens at work whenever the boss leaves? Things slow down at least a little bit. Things slow down to a pace that isn't what the boss would like. So that could happen. Not in the inner circle. Well, we're not the special ones, so we get to stay here and, you know, do cleanup duty or something. And then these were the ordinary ones. I mean, I think of myself as an ordinary Christian. And if there's somebody else here that I feel is more qualified to do the whatever job needs done, then I'm perfectly fine with them doing it, and I'll be right behind them, you know. But it's not my first impulse to jump up and fill that empty hole if it's there for a little bit. And then they're depending on others to be the first responders. And then all of a sudden, we got somebody wanting to be cured, and Jesus isn't here, and Peter, James, and John are with him, and who's going to do this? You know, that type of thing. Or upset, they're not chosen to go, so they took a break. So, well, we're just going to pout a little bit. So it could have been all kinds of excuses, but they weren't on the top of their game, I guess I would say. So in 2 Corinthians 10 again, And the reason I guess I identified with that a lot because, you know, I'm not on the schedule for, what, another 6 weeks maybe? Another 6 weekends or something for a lesson? And, you know, I'm going to just kind of, I'll get a lesson in 5 weeks, you know. I'll worry about it later. And it always, I think I need that stress to a certain extent, but sometimes I wish I would do away with that trait. So, all right, 2 Corinthians chapter 10. All right, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. And we take every thought captive to obey Christ. See, that's our job. We take every thought captive. If we don't, what happens to it? It takes us captive, pretty much. And it starts pushing us around. And it starts... You'll end up somewhere where you didn't want to be. Didn't want to go there. And then you're like, how did I get here? Let's go to Genesis 4. This is the story of Cain. I like the imagery here. Let's see here. Okay, Cain offered a sacrifice, and apparently, and if we know what faith is from belief, and that comes from hearing, so we know that God had told them what they needed to offer for sacrifices, okay? And so Cain offered what he wanted to offer for a sacrifice, and it wasn't what God wanted. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? And why is your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it." I like that, crouching at the door. How many of you go out the door every morning with your lunchbox in one hand, pulling a sweatshirt over your head in the other one, and just out the door and to the car? And what if you knew there was a 8-foot-long timber wolf that hadn't eaten for a week, waiting outside your door? How would you go out the door? It wouldn't be with a sweatshirt over your head. Probably be with some kind of weapon in your hand, or you wouldn't go out the door. So that's our choices. We have to take these things captive, or they will take us captive. We have to control them. And like I said at the beginning, I can't do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. It's not me. It's going to be God. I've tried to do it myself. Multiple times. I've tried to do it. And it doesn't work. It has to be God. It has to be God. All right, let's go to a New Testament example. Luke 22. This is Peter. Or Simon. Luke 22 and 31. And 32. "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." And we know that from other accounts and this one too, if you read further, that Peter was definitely not agreeing with this what was going on. And the very next verse, Peter said to him, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." And Jesus said, "I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you have denied 3 times that you know me." So Peter he felt good. I mean, he felt like he was on top of his game. He was ready to die. He was Navy SEAL material here, and it didn't work. Didn't work. And I really like the last part of 32. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. And I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to do, because I know from experience that I don't have the self-control. I don't have the wherewithal to do this without God. So my advice to you is to accept that earlier than I did, I guess, and go to God. Okay. All right, back to Genesis 4. Oh, wait a minute. Nope, sorry. James, other end. That was a note to myself. Okay. James 1, 14 through 15. All right. Now, this is for you fishermen, or hunters, I guess. Maybe illegal hunters. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. So here, this is like fishing. You get a nice fishing lure or fly or a juicy worm on there and throw it out there, and that fish sees it and thinks, aha, an easy lunch. And then they chomp down on it, and the next thing you know, they're being led off to somewhere they don't want to go. It's the same with us. We see something that is like, look at that. And then, before you know it, you're somewhere else where you don't want to be. So we have to be very careful. And this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for how do you... How do you stay on top of your game, I guess? How do you... how do you recognize the lures, I guess? How do you recognize what those things are, the juicy worms on a hook? How do you recognize that and avoid that? Because I'm even more curious about what you do, because that might help me. So anyway, that's where I'm going with this. Okay. And I skipped something here. Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, it's now. Okay, so captivate. We're supposed to take our thoughts captive. So Doug had a neat analogy of this. He used a dog, so I guess I'll follow the same thing. It says, if I have a dog and I need to keep it captive, and so I put a fence around Jasper County. Is that captive? Yeah, it's captive. Not very closely captive. I mean, it's got a long ways to go. All right, I put a fence around Vandalia. Is that dog captive? Yeah, it's more captive than it was before. It has a lot less territory to run over. Okay. What if I put it in my yard, and I've got a fence around my yard, and the dog is captive in there? That's captive, right? Even more so. Okay. But that dog can still get in trouble in the backyard, can't it? It can still get in trouble. It can dig holes, and it can tear the laundry off the line, and it can, you know, tear up the garbage and do all kinds of stuff, even there. So I put that dog in a kennel, and it's even more kept. It's a lot easier to control the dog in the kennel. So it's just an analogy. It's with our thoughts, we have to do the same thing. If my thoughts are only controlled by a countywide fence, I'm gonna end up in trouble, because there's plenty of stuff inside that fence to get me in trouble. And it keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the best way to totally take that thought captive is to wrap it up like that spider until it can't even move a leg. And it's totally wrapped up. And so it's that wrapping up that I'm looking for. We need to wrap this up, and how do you do that? So I guess that's my question now. I guess I'm going to take your input, if you have any to give me. How do we do this? How do you take your thoughts captive and control what comes in one ear? So I can tell you what I do, I think. I did. There it is. Okay. Well, the first thing is Jesus Christ. He's by far the most effective. I mean, he's a superhero, right? He's the one that can knock it clear out of my head. So that's my biggest weapon right there. Is if I got something I'm thinking about and I don't, and I recognize that, I can think of Jesus Christ, and that's the biggest punch I got right there. And he can get more out of me than anybody else. Bible reading is my thing. It's been my thing for quite a while. I've been off and on again on it, but when I'm doing it regularly, reading the Bible, then that really helps, because then I have it. It's not a 6-on-1 ratio. It's more of a even ratio, because I have more good thoughts in there and rattling around in there that can help me bounce the other ones off of. So memorization. Some people recommended memorization. I can memorize something for about a month, and I guess that's not really memorization, probably. But it doesn't. I can't seem to get it to stay. It doesn't stick. I got stuff in there that is close to memorized, because once I start reading it, it's like the words keep, for the deaf people, keep popping up on the screen, and they're really available, but I can't quite pull them out of thin air. And then I think prayer would be an awesome tool that I had definitely have not used enough of. I'm trying to work on that since, I guess, Murray Road. I guess I've been really trying to hammer on that one. I've been up to my neck in problems, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I should ask God for help." It's like, wait a minute, I should have asked about ankle deep or somewhere along there. But Jeremy Morris said something that really helped him was reading through the Bible in a year. And he said the reason he picked it up the first time was because someone dared him to do it. Or, yeah, I guess it was a dare. I think that's maybe even the word he used. So he did it, and he found that it really helped him. So I'm doing that. I got a chronological Bible. So it reads more like a novel, or, yeah, I guess more like a novel, sort of. It puts all the things in time order. So that helps my mind anyway, because it seems to make more sense to me. Let's see. But these are some of the things I'm doing that I'm trying to. I got a speaker on a flash drive I would like Greg to listen to. I think he would like it. It's a dog and cat philosophy on Christians. And I want to be a dog for Jesus. I think I've talked about this before, but the dog comes running and jumps up on the side of the car and tries to climb in through the window. And that's basically what I want to be. A cat will ignore you and pretend he's God. And the dog thinks you're God, and that's why dogs are better than cats. But anyway. So those are some of the things I'm doing for that. Then let's see, planning ahead is huge in not getting caught flat-footed. I read an article in my NRA magazine about Pearl Harbor. And my opinion of Pearl Harbor always was that it was the Japanese pummeling sleeping Americans, pretty much. But we did manage to take out some of their planes and stuff, and it was people who were watching. It was a lot of the guards and the centurions, something like that. That were watching, and they weren't caught flat-footed like the majority of us at that time, and they were able to still put up a fight. And that's what we need to do. We need to be planning ahead, looking out far enough that we can see the thought coming, perhaps, and have a plan in place. Because if you're like me, it's the same old stinking problem that nailed me for the 200 millionth time, and it just stabbed me right in the heart, and I saw it coming from a mile away if I would have been looking. So plan ahead. Like, all right, if this is going to happen, what am I going to do? And that helps a lot. Have a plan. Okay. Have a partner. Have somebody you talk to about it. The devil loves isolation. If he can make you think you're the only one that has this problem, he's got you nailed down to the floor. And that's not good. Okay. And know that there will be a way of escape. God has told us there will be a way of escape. Either an escape, or he's going to give us the strength to be able to get up under it and carry it away. All right. So, one of the things I thought that Doug, one of the questions that Doug asked, I thought was very, what can we do in others and in somebody else's fight? And I think one of the biggest things there is to be honest, to if you see somebody who's fighting with something, and maybe they think they're the only one, they think they got it hidden, or they think nobody understands or anything like that, maybe you can approach them, but you got to do that very carefully. And you most definitely need to preserve their, dignity. You gotta go to them in such a way that you're not attacking or shaming. So you got to present. That's why, in that case, it would be good if you had the same problem, because then you can, or have dealt with the same problem, and then you can help with them. I've done that twice or a couple different times, and one time I was right and identified I had help, but it was the right problem. And another time, just nothing really happened because the other person was like, "What are you talking about?" So, anyway, it panned out okay in the end. So, and I think that's pretty much all I got. So, that was a rough landing, but we're there. So, wrap your thoughts up, catch them in your head, and take care of them fast, because don't play with them. That doesn't usually work very well. And remember Ephesians 3:14-21, and that's God. God is the one. You have to bend your knee to Him, and He can help you with whatever your problem is. And there is no problem that is not common to man. So you're not the only one with the problem. So if there's anybody here who needs to make themselves right with the church, or to make themselves right for God with the first time, you could come forward as we stand and sing the closing song.